You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Member of the House Intelligence or Senate Intelligence Committee has access to some of the government's most sensitive reporting and analysis. Obviously, any foreign adversary would love to have access to that information. I guess Eric Swalwell says he's a victim in all of this. If that's the case, what he should do is come forward and have a no-holds-barred press conference and explain exactly what his relationship with this Chinese spy was. He keeps hiding behind the cloak of classified information, but there's nothing classified about his fundraising practices or his social life.
Those are the words of Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. This is December the 16th, 2020. And Senator Cotton pointing out that, one, Intel committee members see a lot of information that other members of Congress never see. It's meant to be that way. So those getting on that committee, they are specifically picked. Nancy Pelosi put Eric Swalwell, fellow Democrat from California, on the committee. And, of course, now word has come out that he was in a relationship, you want to call it a friendship, an acquaintance with Christine Fain, disguised as an exchange student who came to the U.S. to build relationships with up-and-coming politicians on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party. That's as it was reported by Axios last week. But since then, a group of 17 Republican House members sending a letter to Pelosi urging her to immediately remove Swalwell from the House Intel Committee. She hasn't done so. And as you heard Senator Cotton say, Swalwell wants to act like, I'm a victim. I didn't do anything. I'm a victim. I got snookered by this, and maybe more than that, by this Chinese beautiful female student. But he's not explaining anything. And Cotton is saying, if you're a victim, you need to come forward. Hold a no bars hold conference and answer any and all questions. And one of the questions being, not just reference any sexual relations, but what kind of pillow talk might have taken place? And what did you tell her so you got to that level? Or was it the other way around? I mean, we need to have some answers. And we're going to be joined later by Fred Flights, president of the Center for Security Policy. Fred Flights says, Reverend Swalwell, Nancy Pelosi, must be made to answer two critical questions. Of course, the Swalwell story is just another example of media coverage or lack of. Hunter Biden's another one. And now today, a new story breaking regarding Hunter Biden and the Chinese chairman. Biden, in 2017, sending in correspondence to the Chinese chairman on this company wants to join with, extending, quote, best wishes from the entire Biden family over the holidays and urging him to quickly send a $10 million wire to properly fund and operate the Biden joint venture with the now bankrupt Chinese energy company. Now, the wire transfer apparently was never completed. But again, Biden was saying, translate my warmest best wishes. Hope to see you soon. And we look forward to getting your money, basically. Joe Biden finally making some comments via statement regarding his son. He said, I am confident Hunter did nothing wrong. So he says. Speaking of Biden, he went to Georgia to speak out for the Democrat candidates in the Senate race. But as he was praising one of the candidates, he didn't know the candidate's name. Or did he just get lost briefly? Or is there something else more serious going on? I will guarantee you this. Kamala Harris took note of that, and she made a little notation. This date, Biden blew the candidate's name. In other words, she's building She's building her own dossier on Joe Biden. I will promise you that. We have restaurants dying all across the nation. Anywhere you live, you probably have seen the same thing. They're saying if you don't do something, you're going to wipe out a core of business all across the nation. And the latest COVID relief package may include another stimulus payment direct to you. And the woke generation, PC, attacking another past president, claiming he was a racist. Now, when I tell you which president, this story is going to make it crystal clear how the woke generation and PC are so screwed up. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand. Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
And what about the one and only Stacey Abrams? Stacey, if we had 10 of you, we could rule the whole world. God love you. Is there anyone who's done more to make sure the voice of every Georgian is heard? I don't think so. Stacey Abrams, you're a hero. You're the one that got this going. And we all thank you. And of course, honk for your next United States Senator, John Ossoff.
And the horns were honking as Biden mispronounced the Senate candidate's name. Does he know the difference? Or was it a mistake? Or was it just a little slip of the tongue? That could happen. If it's live, things like that can happen. I have to admit, there have been times, very few times, very, very rare, that I have made mistakes. I mean, really, really rare. Say, listen. When Joe Biden goes to Georgia to try to promote the Senate candidates, because it's so crucial for the Democrats and the Republicans, this Senate race, I would think he'd spend a little more time on praising the candidate. He spent a lot of that time, as you heard in that clip, about Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams, of course, had run for governor. And they were sure she was going to get it. Remember that a couple years ago? He had Oprah Winfrey there. Everybody was there supporting her. She was going to walk right through what she didn't. And yet she still basically claims, I won. And the Democrat Party continues to lift her up and make her a future heroine, someone they can hold up as a future presidential candidate. or even VP candidate. Remember when Biden was basically going to be the nominee for the Democrat Party? Word came to him that you need to select a woman, and it better be a black woman. And Stacey Abrams was one of the ones they were pushing. He went with Kamala, who was one of the candidates against him in the primaries, as they were trying to go through their effort on the Democrat side. So I guess he's trying to make things better for her in the process by speaking out like that. Who knows? But when it comes to mispronouncing John Ossoff's name, calling him Ossoff or something like that, Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, just couldn't resist talking a little bit about that little kind of mix-up.
So Joe Biden may not know John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock's names, but I guarantee you he knows their radical agenda, because he also said at that event yesterday that if Georgia elects two Republicans, the Republicans are going to block Joe Biden's agenda. And he's found us out. That's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to stop them from raising your taxes and taking your guns and increasing the price of your energy and packing the Supreme Court and making Washington, D.C. a state. Those are the things that John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock will do if they're elected to the United States Senate. I bet that's not what the people of Georgia want. They want people who will be a check and a balance on a radical Democratic agenda. They don't want to turn over the United States Senate to Chuck Schumer.
No, they do not. At least we hope they don't. But Senator Cotton laid out exactly again what's at stake in Georgia. Now, early voting has started, and the early voting turnout is heavy. And there's a massive amount of mail-in balloting that has been spread around and waiting to see how that plays out. And, of course, you have also Reverend Raphael Warnock, as he is trying to maintain that he's a good guy and does not espouse racist views toward whites. The thing that's really at stake in Georgia is the future of the country, truly. If Biden's going to be in the White House and the Democrats are going to control the House, if they also have control of the Senate, it's not going to be good. Congressman Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, pointed out that one of the first issues on the chopping block, if Democrats gain control of the Senate, the first issue on the chopping block, and we've already heard that from some of them, the very first issue will be stripping the Hyde Amendment. Nancy Pelosi has made that clear as well. But Congressman Banks said, a lot of people think Democrats in the House are just passing messaging bills to pander to their base. Well, those messaging bills will get passed by the Senate, get signed by a Democrat president if he, Biden, makes his way to the White House. And one of the first things on the chopping block will be the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment blocks federal Medicaid funding for abortions, except under rare cases. It's been bipartisan for almost 50 years. Presidents like Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and even Joe Biden, just years ago, was in favor of the Hyde Amendment to not allow federal dollars for abortions. Now, they get around it. Federal dollars still go to Planned Parenthood because they don't use it for the specific abortion. They use it for things like, utilities, rent, taxes like that. And it was just last week that Pelosi said the House will vote on repealing the Hyde Amendment in 2021 and said it's long overdue. That's one thing you're going to see. The other thing is open borders. And our Customs and Border Protection Chief Mark Morgan says Biden's message already talking about halting deportations and eliminating President Trump's reforms at the border are creating and contributing to additional illegal immigration and more coming. The Customs and Border Protection Chief Morgan said, cartels, human smugglers are fueling perceptions that our borders will once again be wide open and that will be reinstating the loopholes that had been closed. He adds that if your policy consists of stopping deportation for almost 4 months, the message you're sending is clear and simple. We have open borders. Even the New York Times has acknowledged that Biden's pro-immigration policies are encouraging the poor people of the Central and South America, as well as Central America, considering migrating to the U.S. and Cuba. Many from Cuba are getting their way to Mexico or Honduras or Nicaragua, and then they're making their way with other caravans, joining these caravans and heading toward the U.S.-Mexico border. In fact, Cuban migrants have been posting notes on social networks to join the caravans from Guyana to Paraguay and Chile. If we suddenly have an influx of illegals, what do you think that's going to do to the economy that's already struggling? What do you think it's going to do to those who are struggling to hold on to the lowest paying jobs, but it's a job? And these folks are going to come in, they're willing to do it even cheaper. And I've told you previously, many Latinos that have those jobs and live in those communities, they do not want more illegals to come across because it will threaten their jobs, threaten their livelihood, and threaten their communities. They understand that. They recognize it. And we also have this issue of police reform. Defund the police. The county sheriffs in Georgia publicly condemning Democrat plans for any police reform. Joe Biden had told a group of civil rights leaders, let's don't discuss that until after the January 5 Senate runoff election. And you know why? Because they saw through the general election and some House members that did survive just barely, when they had a conference call after the general election, one among many was complaining that we lost some good people because of defund police. Of course, AOC, Congresswoman AOC, said, don't blame that on me. Blame it on you not being prepared. But defund the police did hit hard on the Democrat candidates and will again play in this election if the Democrats are being honest with you. But now Biden has passed the word, others are saying, to candidates John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, just stay away from that subject. But again, the county sheriffs in Georgia are trying to put the word out to the public across Georgia. All we've heard for months from the Democrat Party is defund the police. And I understand Joe Biden's talking the other way now, not wanting to talk about it. This is according to one of the sheriffs. I understand he's not wanting to talk about defunding until after this election, but that doesn't change anything. The program by the Democrat Party has been to defund the police, to change the basic concept of police work. And they will. So you've got Senators Perdue and Loeffler, Republicans, sounding alarms over those comments and others. Biden has problems with inside his own party as well, as does Pelosi. By the way, Pelosi, many are saying, AOC being one of them, she's too old, she needs to go, so does Chuck Schumer, he needs to go. And if anyone thought that AOC was thinking, I'll become the House Speaker, get rid of Pelosi, even she admits, and I'm amazed she said this. Maybe she's just trying to act humble. I don't know. But her remark was, yeah, we need fresh blood as a House Speaker. But I know I can't do it. I'm not ready for it yet. I'm not ready. So does she mean, or is she saying kind of draft me and I'll serve? I don't know. But I do know this, that Joe Biden is already upsetting so many. The leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement have been trying for more than a month to get a meeting with Joe Biden. A month and nothing. He will not give them a meeting. Obama had them come right into the White House, giving them credibility and everything, and they cannot even get a meeting with Biden. And they're also not happy with his nomination of former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg for Secretary of Transportation. Who is? But specifically, Buttigieg is struggles with minority voters. Buttigieg had faced opposition from the local black community after he demoted the city's first black police chief. That followed a white police officer shooting and killing a black man. Black Lives Matter activists followed Buttigieg on the campaign trail, protesting him repeatedly. So now that Biden has selected him to head up Secretary of Transportation, they're not happy with that. And then there's this other side of that story. Buttigieg, of course, came as a darling of the liberal media in the beginning, as he was the first openly gay candidate to win delegates in a major party's presidential primary. And the mainstream media has just been fawning over Buttigieg now being named for that position, tapped to be Secretary of Transportation. Of course, it has to go through the Senate. And they're praising him as being the first openly gay cabinet member. They're wrong. They're overlooking former acting director of National Intel, Richard Grenell. Grenell was not ever confirmed for the position because he was in nominated ambassador of Germany. But they try to make something out of something, and then they realize, oh, we missed the boat on that one, didn't we? Take a break when we come back. Some fiery words taking place today in a hearing, and I'm telling you, it got kind of nasty because of, quote, disinformation. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So it's just galling, and I just have to point out that the purveyors of Russian disinformation, Hillary Clinton's campaign, the DNC, the Steele dossier, the ranking member Peters accusing Senator Grassley and I of disseminating Russian disinformation, that's where the disinformation is coming. That's where the false information, the lies, the false allegations. You lied repeatedly.
You lied repeatedly
in the press that I was spreading Russian disinformation, and that was an outright lie, and I told you to stop lying, and you continue to do it.
Mr. Chairman, this is not about airing your grievances. I don't know what rabbit hole you're running down.
You talked about Russian disinformation.
Rabbit holes.
Senator Paul.
This is simply not what we're dealing
with. Senator Paul.
But Mr. Chairman, you can't make these
Judge
false
Starr.
Allegations. And then dropping it there. That is why this needs to return back
Good
to its
star,
Senator Paul.
Partisan things. This is terrible what you're doing to this committee and all the great work that you talked about.
It is what you have done to this committee.
It is what you've done to this committee. That was an outburst between Homeland Security Committee Chair in the Senate, Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, accusing ranking member Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan, of spreading Russian disinformation and claiming that everything was being spread by Ron Johnson. He said, I told you to stop lying, and you continued doing it. Now, this today was a hearing on the irregularities of the 2020 election. That's how it started, to address claims from Peters, Senator Peters, that he had spread Russian disinformation about Hunter Biden. Well, Johnson said Peters has been the one spreading all the false information from Russia. He said, I just have to talk about Russian disinformation because the people peddling it are not on my side of the aisle. And he pointed out senior Democrat leaders, including ranking members Peters, they were involved in a process of creating a false intelligence product. It was supposed to be classified. They leaked it to the media. They did, didn't they? They had no problems with leaking information if it made Trump and the Trump team and Republicans look bad about the so-called Steele dossier and the Russian collusion, all of that. They did every bit of that. And I'm glad to see that the chairman, Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, said, you know, before we continue talking about disinformation regarding the 2020 election, let's point out who's been responsible for all these stories surfacing and kind of running around about Russian disinformation and tying it to Republicans and the Russian collusion story to Trump. And, of course, Senator Peters, Democrat Michigan, said, this is terrible what you're doing this committee. And Johnson's answer is what you've done to this committee, falsely accusing the chairman of spreading disinformation. That's why I had to respond. I'm glad. I can tell many Republicans are finally getting fed up with always being the butt of the allegations that we have been wrong. Because the mainstream media will pick up what the left says and run with it like crazy. We're going to get into that in more detail regarding Hunter Biden and the Eric Swalwell story in the next hour. But we take a break for a moment. When we come back, just how dire is the situation for small businesses across the nation because of COVID, especially restaurants. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'm the executive director of the New York City Hospitality Alliance, and here we are in the crossroads of the world. When you look at the restaurant industry, we are a melting pot. We are the backbone of New York City. Pre-pandemic, there was more than 25,000 eating and drinking establishments throughout the five boroughs, employing more than 300,000 New Yorkers. Now, we don't know. Thousands of small businesses have shut. When we got shut down the first time, we plummeted from more than 300,000 jobs to about 90,000. Thankfully, due to indoor dining, limited indoor dining, outdoor dining, we've hired back about 100,000 people. But guess what? There's tons of people still out of work. And with our new shutdown, those 100,000 jobs could be back on the chopping block.
That's one of the spokesmen appearing yesterday at a rally in New York City, trying to impress upon the city and the world how difficult COVID shutdown has been on small businesses such as restaurants. New York City, of course, being a prime example, but it's happening all across the nation. In the St. Louis area, for instance, numerous restaurants are closed in one county and open in another. And we're happy for those who are being that are open because they're fulfilling their requirements as far as being safe with the COVID, but they're able to stay in business, keep folks employed, and not just the restaurant direct personnel. You have to remember, this is a ripple effect. You close a restaurant, well, then you got food delivery drivers that are shut out. You've got food supplies that suddenly, I don't have a market for it. And it just goes on and on. And usually, when you get to the waiter, waitress, cook, dishwasher level, they depend entirely upon that for their livelihood. But New York City is, again, echoing what we've seen across the nation. In other cities and other states, California now looking at another massive shutdown. The National Restaurant Association estimating the other day 110,000 restaurants are closed that will not reopen. And in New York, I mean, they just got permission to kind of start some indoor dining again, and then they got shut down again. And, of course, now they got this massive storm getting ready to pound New York and the Northeast. That's going to hurt those who are still trying to stay open. Some had talked about it. We had a guest on the other day talking about maybe it's time for mass civil disobedience. For restaurants and similar businesses, say, look, we are going to open. We're going to be open. We're going to follow COVID precautions short of shutting the doors so we can keep people employed and keep the business going. They're not looking to cause problems. Just leave us be. People can come and go to the restaurant, or they don't. They make that decision. When they come in, they'll follow protocol. We're doing our best to protect that, but let the people have some decision in it, and let us decide if we're going to be open and what happens from that point. Well, of course, many have quickly said, you know what, they'll go right away. The leaders who want to keep them shut, they'll go after their license, alcohol license, whatever they got, permits, they'll shut everything down. Well, there'll probably be a covey of lawyers willing to step in either pro bono and or for the publicity to get in there and say, well, let's lead the fight. Let's fight back. We're waiting to see if that's going to develop. If it keeps going like this, we are going into the biggest season when folks are spending their money, holiday parties, hosting holiday parties, gatherings and so forth, and it's all going to be dead this time around. And how many people count on the tips and the wages they make going into the holiday just to put something under the tree? I was talking to a friend last night. He is with a casino in California, and talking about how that casino has benefited because of the shutdown ordered by Newsom. Well, I know I hear you say, well, how are they open? Well, they are on an Indian reservation. An Indian reservation. And the state has no control over that casino. And he says, what we're seeing is an immense amount of folks coming in for the dining, the gaming. He said they can't spend money on movies and theaters. They're not open. They can't go eat somewhere else. They're not open. They can't really go to any sporting events. They're not open. So the spendable income they have is coming to us. He said, it's great for us and our employees, but a lot of folks are hurting elsewhere. And there's a report I got in my hand that just came out from the Michigan Restaurant and Lodging Association. It is estimating that one-third of Michigan restaurants believe they will close for good in 2021. They're barely hanging on. They're trying to get through just a little bit longer. Maybe we'll get something out of the holiday. And if not, we'll shut the doors. Again, back to that rally in New York City about the restaurant association and not just the restaurants, the ripple effect.
Let's recognize this is not only just restaurants and restaurant workers. This is the upstate farmer, the florist, the sales rep that sells us beer, and so many others that are vital to the economic ecosystem. So without additional support from the federal government, the state government, Governor Cuomo, Mayor de Blasio, all of the elected officials, many of whom are standing here in support of the industry, let's convert sales tax into grants to help pay for air filtration systems. Let's waive and forgive permitting and licensing fees.
Yes! Yes!
Let's focus on education training, not fines and revoking permits. New York City will not recover unless our city's restaurant and our nightlife industry is at the core of the recovery. And these people have helped build New York City and make it what it is. So we will not recover unless our industry is at the core of the recovery. I want to thank you and thank all of you for what you do. Everyone, save our restaurants!
Save our restaurants!
And you listen to that, and you know it's true. It's true in New York City. It's true in every community. I don't know how small you might be. If you got restaurants, it's critical. And New York City, you got the theater life. All of that is just, it's a ghost town, basically. Where's the relief? As he said, don't quit fining us. Find a way to help us. Well, Congress apparently is closing on a new coronavirus relief bill. They're trying to, and it will at least maybe even include direct payments up to $1,200 to adults earning less than $99,000 a year. So that'll help a lot of folks. They say they're trying to, but these businesses themselves, and they might even extend some benefits. It's still, I'm not going to give you a final word on it because they don't know. They're still going back and forth. And keep in mind that Pelosi has been a little bit more pliable now that it looks like Biden's going to come into office, whereas before she was basically using her no, no, no to make you suffer. So you'd blame Donald Trump for all of this. And as I said earlier, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said it's time we have new leadership in the Democrat Party. She's speaking specifically about Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. But even she acknowledges, believe it or not, she acknowledges that while we need new leadership, I'm not ready. I know I'm not ready to do that. But we need to have new people come in. And, of course, everything, a lot of folks are depending upon the vaccines getting around. And they're being distributed. And the latest survey from a Kaiser Family Foundation poll shows the number of Americans willing to take the vaccine has increased in the last 2 months. The survey finding 71% say they will definitely or probably get the vaccine, if it's determined to be safe, of course, and free, which it is to be. Back in September, only 63% said they were willing to get it. And, of course, the other question is, are you going to be ordered to take it and get the vaccine if you're going to stay in your employment? In certain businesses, food service, so forth, you have to have a hepatitis test. You have to have it if you want to work in that business. They may well make this that for that and other business and for schools and for kids. There is a healthcare worker in Alaska that had an adverse reaction just minutes after getting the Pfizer vaccine. She's a middle-aged woman, the allergic reaction within 10 minutes. She had a reaction that required hospitalization and monitoring. She's not going to get the second dose at this time. She's apparently going to be okay. Now, there have been other incidents, a couple in the UK, but this is first in the U.S. And a lot of folks still aren't sure. A lot of them are saying, well, I want to see others to get it first. And others say, I never get the flu vaccines. Why am I going to bother now? I'm in good health. I'm doing fine. The projection is, by the Health and Human Services Secretary Czar, that 75% of the population needs to get the vaccine for it to be effective. 75%. Well, if this number is true, that 71% say now they're willing to get it, if that holds true across the nation, well, then you're going to get to that. And, of course, this COVID is also affecting kids and their grading and their schooling. So what do you do to help the kids? Give them just a pass, let them move on? Pretty much that's what's being suggested. I'll explain. Stand by, please.
USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You know, there's another part of this COVID reaction, the ripple effect, involving the stock market, money markets, and, of course, housing. We've already seen that housing prices are accelerating because folks with the lower mortgage rates are looking to move up, buy something else, and there's a real pressure. And if you've got a home for sale, you're in a pretty good position. Because many are going either at the asking price or above without much argument. And the Federal Reserve at its final meeting just decided this. It was expected, but they decided to hold the benchmark federal funds rate at a range between 0% and 0.25%. It's been there since mid-March. They are now thinking it's going to remain at near zero through 2025. 3. They're doing that because they expect a smaller decline in the nation's GDP. They're also changing their projection for that, by the way, and a lower unemployment rate next year. They're already looking at changing the projections on that, but keeping it at near zero. In other words, normally you want to borrow $100 from the bank. Well, they're going to charge you what? At one point, they could get 10%, $10 for you, and then it's $4 per hundred, and then 2%. And now, here, just take it and bring it back. Is that what they're doing, basically? No, they're still making a little cut. You know they got to do that. And then, of course, we look at what's happening to our kids. And I mentioned this repeatedly. We will not know for years what this lockdown has done to education for our children, much less their mental health. I got an F in a class one time. I don't know why it just suddenly hit me in the head that I did. I guess I wanted to forget it. I'll explain that in a minute. Of course, I always tell you that first time I had real math was in the third grade, and hardest 3 years of my life. So it could be a joke. I could be real. You don't know. But I got the F, and I'll explain that in a minute. But I've got in front of me here something. Our boots-on-the-ground reporter, Andrew in Chicago, said, look what they're doing in Wisconsin. I don't know how he got it, but it's pretty interesting. This is what Wisconsin schools are putting out. It was something sent out to parents this last Saturday, talking about that we're constantly evaluating the current learning plan, possible adjustments. Many students have struggled with the academic challenges. We need to acknowledge that, give them some academic relief. In other words, we implemented a new late work policy, so they're going to allow the kids to bring the work in later. That's going to look real good in the future if your job, if you're late. We'll go, well, you know, I got to be late on turning things at school. Why can't I be late turning in this for you? And then we're also going to offer a pass-fail option for the first semester grades. That's kind of like college in many cases. We're talking about elementary grade schools. And then they're going to provide equal instant relief, they say, by changing the grading scale for all students for the remainder of the first semester. Listen to this grading scale. How would you do with this? To get an A, you have to have 90 to 100. There's no A plus. That's just an A, 90 to 100. An A minus, 88, 89. Normally, that was anything below 90 was a B, right? Well, they're moving everything up. Kind of a grading curve, you might say, or really just shoving it forward. A B plus, 86, 87, a B, 78 to 85, B, 76, 77. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you. Let me give you this, C minus, 64 to 65. If your grade 64 to 65 on a test or anything, then it's a C minus. Well, what do you have to do to get a D? You get a D plus if you get a 62 or 63. Then you get a D, and then you get a D minus. A D minus, if you make 52 or 53. In other words, on a test, if you got 52 or 53% of the answers, you got a D minus. There is no F. There's no F. That's it, D minus. If you get 51, you're not going to get an F. They'll probably round you up to 53. Who knows? They might move to 64. So what if you get a 40? Well, we're going to round you up to D minus at least. Is that going to help our education system? Is that going to help kids? Are they all going to get just, awards for attending? Or at least trying to attend? Participation awards, as we call them? No F. All right, I told you that I did get an F at one time in school. This was college years. And I was not making an excuse here. I'm just telling you that I was working 60 hours a week in a business, and I was, finishing up my Marine Reserve duty, and I was also trying to take 9 hours one semester. I decided I'm going to try 12 hours, one of those 3 hours being accounting. Bad decision, Larry. Bad decision to cram that in. I got behind the workbook. I thought, well, I could salvage it on the final. I'll get through with the final. I should have taken that pass-fail option and gotten out of it. No, I gambled. I flunked the test, and I flunked the course. However, if I had this grading system, I wouldn't get an F. I might get a D minus. Makes sense to you? We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about Eric Swalwell and how he needs to come clean on what he knows and the danger to the Intel Committee. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.